The ABLE account could be opened, managed by the person with a disability. Now, we'll talk about in the real world circumstances why that may work, why that may not work, but people with disabilities are managing their own accounts. Outside of that, for those who cannot manage or open their own ABLE account, we have the authorized legal representative with an expanded definition. So what went into place in the final regulations added several more categories. But if you look at the slide, there's the top two bullet points is really what we're talking about. Not only the expanded authorized legal representative, but also the hierarchy of that, the order of who that could be. And that's important to note. ABLE programs are using self-attestation in most cases, where the person opening the account is attesting to their legal authority to manage the account and their eligibility to have an account. So that self-attesting typically means that you're not submitting documentation saying that you fit within this hierarchy or that you fit appropriately at a level within this hierarchy to be managing the account. But if we look at a hierarchy of who can open and manage an account, it does start with the person with a disability. And something I want to point out is the words willing and able. So if we go down the hierarchy of who else could open an account, we look at who is willing and able to do that. The list, and I still even have to reference my cheat sheet in front of me because it's been expanded so far, but that list includes a power of attorney at the top of the list, a POA. That would be designated by the person with a disability, him or herself, if they have the legal authority to do so. If not a POA, the next in the list would be a conservator or a legal guardian, depending on what state you're in, what the terminology is called, but a legal guardian with financial authority designated by the court. Next after that is spouse. Spouse is an added category of ALR. So a spouse of a person with a disability could open the account. After that is parent. Parent, you have to look into the legal age of the person with a disability. If the person is an adult, they are no longer under the authority of that parent, even though sometimes parents like to think that they have that authority, but the parent would need some other additional authority. As a minor, the parent can do it as a parent. After that is sibling. That is another category that was added. A sibling can open and manage an account. After that is a grandparent. That was another category added. And then finally, and we'll spend some time talking about this today, is a Social Security Administration representative payee. And that is the last in the hierarchy, but probably the biggest and most important addition to the expanded hierarchy of ALR. A representative payee is oftentimes already involved in the person's finances by receiving and managing the Social Security funds. With that designation in and of itself could make that person able to open and manage an account. Wrapping this slide up, I'll just say that there are several other pieces within the final regulations, some of which are voluntary to a program to implement, some are mandatory to implement, but we look at things like co-signature authority and successor authority and a successor eligible beneficiary, sub-accounts, which is a whole discussion of itself. Does it make sense to have sub-accounts in the ABLE account and other regulations as well? Keep in mind, we have until November of this year to implement the mandatory requirements. Not all ABLE programs have implemented. The stable account program that I work with just in the last couple of months has successfully accomplished the expanded ALR, and we're very happy to be letting people open up accounts under that. So Haley, I'll toss it back over to you.
Great. Yeah, you know, I think this expanded piece is huge, especially that representative payee piece. One thing, though, that I've found is that providers who are representative payees are definitely hesitant to do these things. I think they need some education on it. So if you have connections to providers and stuff, talk to them about how it would be useful for folks to use them. I think that they're important. we take trust for these people when I think they should go into an ABLE account. You know, we're setting up trust for folks all the time that, you know, as much as it helps, you know, get us some extra money, I don't want to be using people's money to set up a trust and charging them every month when it could go into an ABLE account and grow tax-free and do all of those things. And so we're working on educating folks, but I think if you've got, you know, the ear of people, definitely talk to them about it, because ABLE accounts are amazing. I think that they are just, they're so great, especially as practitioners. When we are a trustee, when we are the ones who are the roadblock between the individual and their money, you know, it makes them feel like they have no autonomy. It really feels like they have no control over the things that are in their life. And, you know, people with disabilities are often not given control of a lot of things in their life. So if we've got an opportunity to do that for folks, I think that it's a great way for us to do that. It's one of the big reasons that I love ABLE accounts. And we use them often. We talk to people all the time about using them. And so it's become a big part of what it is that we do as administrators.